Your question recorded, like audio recorded for the rest of the members to hear, is only going to be shared with the members. Can you just like wave at me so I can pause the recording? And then Samira and I have some questions for people who weren't here or questions that you've asked us to ask on your behalf. So we'll also jump in with a couple of questions. But who wants to start us off?
Does everyone remember their questions?
Can you just read them? It might be easier.
Yeah. Or does anyone want to ask a question?
Wait, yeah. Oh, is it straight away questions? Yeah.
Go on, Stephen.
Yeah, go on, Stephen.
So when it comes to screenplays and payments, so for theatre,
yeah.
What's the difference of writing a play for theatre and doing screenwriting for like film or TV?
Okay, that's a big question. It's a good question. I'm going to ask you a question back about that. When you say what's the difference, do you mean in what it would actually look like on the page, or how the approach would be different, or what's or all of it? I'm happy to answer all of it.
Yeah, so for some, so if you're like, do you have more freedom in as like theatre, do you have more freedom
with
your pieces on TV or?
Oh my God, that's you've really got to the heart of it. Of course, Stephen has. Well done. Yeah, it's like, so what's interesting is that in theatre, theoretically, as a playwright, you have the sort of leading voice, especially someone like the Royal Court, or here would be the same, where there's a certain sort of way of working. So you have complete freedom as a playwright. Unless somebody said to you, Stephen, I would like you to write a play about roller skating because I want to put on a play about roller skating or whatever. So sometimes somebody might come to you and commission you to write a play about a certain subject. But on the whole, you would be able to write about what you want to write about. And it's about your voice and the story that you want to tell. In television, there are really few writers who get that chance. I can name a few of them, like somebody like Jack Thorne would be able to do that, or various other people, and they would go, I've got an idea of something I want to write, and because of their experience and what they've written in the past, they would be able to do whatever they wanted. But the majority of writers in television get employed to do a specific thing, and then you don't have loads of creative freedom. You're working within a structure and a sort of formula of what somebody wants. And even in theatre, even if I think like the play isn't working very well, and I would try to be encouraging a writer to like take it down one route, even though I could be suggesting that, if the writer said to me, no, I don't like that idea of like ending it like that, Vicky, I wouldn't be able to enforce that on the writer. The writer would be able to have them. But in television, if you were writing a script in television and we said, actually, I don't think it should end like that, it needs to end happily, because all the audience want is hope, you would have to do that.
Really?
Wow. And in theatre, you really only have, like, as a playwright, you really only have, like, one boss, which would be, like, the artistic director or the director that you're working with. In television, everyone is so much more fearful about audiences and offending people and all those kind of things, that there are loads and loads and loads of layers of people giving you notes. So it's much, much, much harder. Film, there is a little bit more freedom, but it's harder to get a film made. Okay.
Thank you. So if you don't mind, Steve, going into what you said about that, about the scripts and stuff.
Yeah.
I recently read that, you know, writers have been told by big studios in America and Netflix and all that sort of to deliberately dumb down their writing because they said that we want to be able to keep people's attention, because as they're flicking through their phone, they're like watching it, one eye on the TV and then...
Yeah.
But surely that's going to destroy... Because what you said, it's all about story, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it is. I think it's really hard for people. People who make television now are really nervous about people's attention spans. And how do you get them? However, I'm going to say that. But when I did Boon, as I was telling you, the thing I did in telly, which was like... it was like... I can't even do the maths about how many years ago it was. The person who ran Central Television then was somebody called Ted Childs. And he used to say, apologise for my swearing, he used to say the audience need a fight or a fuck in the first 2 minutes, otherwise they'll turn over. So it was interesting that even 35 years ago, they were saying that about attention span and keeping somebody in. So it's always been a thing about how do you keep your attention, which is kind of one of the amazing things about theatre, which I think, even though often you do switch off when you go to the theatre, because it can sometimes be a bit boring, you actually go in, sit down, put your phone down, and you have to concentrate. So you do have a captive, if you can get them there, a captive audience. It's quite interesting. I think it's one of the few places left in the world where, as a community, people sit down and all focus on the same thing. It doesn't even happen in cinema anymore. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, good questions.
I wanted to. So this is specific to theatre.
Yeah.
As a director, have you worked with a playwright developing script as the director for a play? And if you have, what's that experience like?
Yeah.
And is there any nuggets or advice or wisdom that you can share on that experience?
That's such a good question. That's mainly been most of the work that I've done, and I've probably been lucky enough to direct over 150 productions in my time, and I would say that like three quarters, if not more than that, have been with playwrights on that experience. I think it's hugely about developing trust, building trust together, and also about me working really hard to understand what the playwright's intention is and what they want. So that any notes I give them, similar to your question about what is being a good director or great director, any notes or any questions I give are not about what I think it should be. They're about what is the writer trying to do, and is the writer achieving that? So it's really important to understand the word endeavour, what the endeavour of the playwright is. And then you can ask them questions around that, because then you have a very fair space to be going, you said you wanted to, the endeavour of your piece is to make the audience laugh. You want to do a comedy. This isn't quite doing that. It's rather me going, this isn't funny enough. It's a really damaging thing to say to somebody. Whereas if you go, you said you wanted the audience to laugh all the way through this, well, this isn't doing that yet. So it's about working out what the intentions of finding the right vocabulary to be able to do that, so that the writers don't feel deflated or judged, that they feel that you're helping them be better. It's always about what's the potential. So that's a really important thing. It's about trying to work out how to say difficult things in a nice way sometimes. And also to sort of hold it, this sounds quite soft, but to hold it with a lot of love. Because, people, it's hard to write a play. It's hard to write. It's hard to be creative. You are bearing a part of your soul to do that. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that all the time. Not to the person, but to in your mind, to be creating an environment where you're acknowledging the effort of that.
And this would usually be if they started, if they've had a little bit of a piece of the story or started something already, they've had something already, and you take from
there. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes people have come to me and said, I've got, I've read some of their writing and I've been able to offer someone a commission. And I said, so what would you like to write about? And a writer might go, oh, I've got this idea and I've got this idea. Right. And which one do you think I should do? So sometimes you have to sort of help them dig a bit to go, what's the right thing for them to be writing, and what's the thing that also you could get on for them? So sometimes people might have an amazing idea, but it's going to have 100 people in it, and it needs to do this, it needs to do that, and you're kind of that it's really hard that's going to get on, whereas this thing you're writing. So it's sometimes about helping them do the thing that's going to get on as well. John, you had your hand up.
I just wanted to know what you think about the sort of relationship between film and theatre. And sort of come up with some ideas myself, but I'm not sure about it. But I found that it's the key difference is that it's whether it's going to be a live performance, in other words, actual human beings are in front of you, or you're in a studio.
Yeah.
And I found out albums and stuff and films that that actually doing the music in the studio is very similar to actually making a film
yeah.
and doing it in the studio yeah. and the outside, when actually doing a live performance when you're playing a gig
yeah.
is incredibly similar to a live thing.
Yeah.
So I always actually say when people say about learning to write for that, I say, ah, well, what are you, not only do you need to know your audience,
yeah.
you do need to know the format. And I remember when I was at the National at the film school, that one of the things they drummed into us was show, don't tell.
Yeah.
And theatre's completely the other way around.
Yeah.
You can't sort of do a close-up of the gun in the bag.
No.
You no. Go, you've got a gun in your bag.
I know, yeah, absolutely.
So it's, I think you actually have to, I mean, you probably had this. Have you had some scripts, theatre scripts, I presume, that you thought, this would make a great film?
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other way around.
Absolutely.
Someone said this script, right? And you think, well, this yeah. never yeah. going to be, or could
yeah.
be. But I think actually people have seen, but talking about film, that it's so strict about the format.
Yeah, the that's actually why I was interested when Stephen said the question.
Courier 12 point.
Yeah, that's
literally,
right.
I know producers, literally, if it's not in Courier 12 point, with the right spacing, it yeah. just goes into the bit.
Yeah, I tell you also why that is. It's because in television and film, they have quite a strict sort of formula. That's why I don't love it as much as theatre, because there's no formula in theatre. You can write what you want.
Yeah.
But they have quite strict... Film less so, because film still can feel a little bit more, like, weird. We've all seen all those, like, you know, something like that. But television is quite formulaic. And it's because... Well, you know this anyway, John, so I'm sorry if I'm telling you something you already know, but yeah. it's about the pace, it's about the speed of how you
yes.
read it. So in theatre, you know, sometimes you can look at a page... and it can be really, really dense, like a speech, and it might take 10 minutes to read for the actor to do that speech on one page, or there might be like 5 words on the page, and it's just like something like that. It might just have loads of X's on the page, and then it's like that, or whatever it is. But in television, you time it, so every page is a minute, because if it's laid out like that.
Do you know how it came about? It's because with the original Hollywood, when yeah. they first started out the talkies and stuff, they only had Courier 12-point typewriters.
Right, yeah,
so it actually says it there. And then they suddenly realised you'd have a 90-page script.
And you'd know exactly how long it would
be. 90 minutes long, uncannily. It's,
yeah.
That's why they
stick to it. So they're sort of stuck in that
world.
You
read it 30 minutes and you get some page. Why am I getting bored on
yeah.
page 25?
Yeah, no, so it's very different. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
I saw you went to the Adelaide Festival as well as the...
I did.
Also as well as Edinburgh Festival. I've been to both as well.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you like compare the two?
Amazing. Well, it's interesting because I went to the Edinburgh Festival first when I was a student.
Yeah.
So when I was 18, and I've been so many years since. So I've been there loads, and I met my husband there.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind
it's
of
amazing
important.
Place, yeah,
it's
good
yeah.
trip. Good trip.
Yeah, good trip. That was a good trip, that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Adelaide Festival, I've only been to once. And so when I've been to the Edinburgh Festival, I've always been to the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
And when I went to the Adelaide Festival, I went to the International Festival. So we had like much, we had put in a really posh hotel and of those kind of things. And it's much smaller, Adelaide.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of amazing, the atmosphere.
Yeah,
isn't it? I loved it. And I think the thing that really excited me as well, that sort of at the Edinburgh Festival, I sort of, because I've been going for so many years and a lot of, yeah, absolutely. And Adelaide, there were lots of different artists there whose work I hadn't seen before. Really interesting, like sort of First Nations Aboriginal theatre companies making work that doesn't get to here. So it was really interesting, different range of work. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's definitely different things. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I saw quite a few things there. It was really, really.
Yeah. When did you go?
Oh, it was about 8 years ago now. So but it's really, I really enjoyed it. It's obviously a lot smaller, but
yes.
But the Edinburgh Festival is just getting really
it's
hard
so
to go
massive.
To. So I went to one show in Edinburgh, and I was the only person at the show.
Oh my god, I know.
And I told them not to do it.
Oh,
so like 8 performers.
No.
I said no, but they insisted on doing it for this show. Was really, really good as well.
Oh, I'm so, they will have loved that then. That would have meant so much to them.
Yeah, I know. So I really found this. But I just thought really bang on, only person in the show.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
That's how it's getting at the Edinburgh now, because there's so many.
Yeah,
shows
so hard to choose, isn't it? You sort of get overwhelmed immediately even thinking about it. Yeah.
Nice
for
Jamie.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Has anyone else got any questions off the top of their head or pre-planned questions that they want to ask Richie?
No.
I can go.
No.
You go.
No,
first.
No. After your answers.
Okay, I've got a question from someone who's not here today, which
Ooh.
is, what are the key questions you ask yourself about story and staging before you head into the rehearsal room?
Well, if you're going to go into rehearsals, you have to have answered a lot of those things because you've had to have meetings with like the set designer. So you have to sort of, for months before, you would meet with the set designer and then they have to design the set because it's too late when you start rehearsals to be able to budget it and build the set. So you have the sort of timelines of when you would do that. So that's a massive thing that you've done. So you'd sit down and you'd go, what's the world that we think this is going to be set in? And like, was it Izzy's question was like, what do you think about what's in your head when you read a play? You sort of go, what does it need? You know, does it need to be, like I'm about to do a play called, well, it was a film, you might know the film, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. And that is from a book that was written in 1960 in Edinburgh, and then it was turned into a film with Maggie Smith, quite a famous film with Maggie Smith. So that's set in a school over a certain amount of time. So one of the questions that I thought about that was like, okay, so we all know what a school looks like, and we all know what like people sitting at desks looks like, and it's really, really difficult to put desks and a school teacher on stage because they all go in one direction. The teacher has to stand in one thing, so it's actually really boring to stage. So I was like, if we know it's in a school, does it have to be set in, can I put it in a different environment on stage? Does it have to be in a school? So you have to answer things like that. They're the big things you have to answer.
I saw Jamie, and that was in the dancing on the tables and stuff.
Yeah, that's right, that was great.
Did you see that? Yeah,
it's really good. That is brilliant. Mm. But once you've seen it on stage, it always looks the same. So whatever the show is, the school on stage, always the classroom on stage always looks the same. So it's like, how do you make someone have a different feeling? That was brilliant.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was really good. Yeah. Yes, yeah, so you do have to think about it.
Stevie, did you want to ask?
Yeah, this is just a funny question. So when it comes to like adapting video games and books, I recently saw Mortal Kombat, I mean 1 and 2, and I think it's trash. So I was thinking, if you were like, would you rather have someone to direct it who's a fan of the material?
Yeah.
Or would you rather go for someone that's new?
Oh my God, that's a brilliant question. I tell you how I'm going to answer that question, Stephen, is that I am working on a musical with a writer called Jessica Swale, who wrote Paddington. Paddington the musical. And her example of that is like, she's always at her best when she's doing something she doesn't know anything about. Like, she'd never written a musical before and she didn't have any interest in Paddington or a small bear coming from Peru. But she had to approach it in a way which was like, how do I really get to understand it and do it the best? Whereas often, if somebody's really passionate about something and knows it really, really well, they don't often ask the same questions of it, and actually it's not quite as generous to an audience.
Too many preconceived ideas.
Yeah, and you think, oh, you know, like Mortal Kombat, you go, oh, well, I know what that bit is, so I don't need to make that clear.
Whereas it, beard?
Yeah, so it's a really, I don't have a single answer, but it's a really brilliant question. Yeah. Great, yeah, isn't it?
Okay.
Have you got one?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. So this is from a few people, but what advice would you have for someone that is over 25, plus that's trying to access opportunities for new writers or even people that are in the arts trying to break out into the arts?
Really good. So I think, well, when I was at the Royal Court, we got rid of the young writers thing because I hated that. But they brought it back. So there is a young writers thing. I think that wisdom and life experience is really important in making anything. I think people feel a responsibility at the moment because of COVID and how difficult sort of education system and things to offer up opportunities for young people, because people have felt that they've sort of been closed down a bit. So I think those things are important. But I think for people over 25 and older, I think it's about being clear about why you want to do it and what you want to do, being specific again, knowing what you can bring to it, and then doing research, as much research as you possibly can, about the places where you think that connects or where they're doing it. People are quite, it's a bit boring if you don't like doing research, but people are quite articulate about why they do things or what they do things. You know, like for example, if you didn't have anything to do with SIDS, and you'd heard that it might be interesting, you could go online. There are loads of articles that Chris has been in. There's loads of stuff. You could get the sense of the place without being here. So you would go, oh, is this somewhere I'm going to connect to or not? So I think doing that research is a really important part of it. There are a lot of schemes. And often I think we find out about those quite late. So you need to be quite on top of keeping looking for what those are. And they sort of shift. And I think it also depends on what it is that you're interested in doing. It's not like a blanket thing. Like if you're thinking about being a director, I think writing to directors and asking, you gave me an example, sorry, not singling you out, is it, but you gave me a really interesting example of having written to an established and very brilliant director who did say, come and observe me.
I just cornered him.
Wow. So you just
did
say,
you say you called him or cornered?
Cornered him.
Oh, well done. Right.
Which is really brave. But you did choose a really good person because he's a very open director called Matthew Dunster. He's from Manchester, working class background, would be really aware that wanted to give people an opportunity that he had.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's about finding the people who speak to you. And also the organisations that do. It's a bit general, but it is about being specific.
Because I suppose if you've written a comedy, you don't want to send it to someone who's all about drama.
Oh my God, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. That would be the weird thing to do.
Because they'd be like, well, this isn't in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And would you, so let's just say someone's got a completed script right here, right now.
Yeah.
They've done all their research.
Yeah.
Would it be an idea to send that directly to them? Or would it be a case of connecting with the first saying, look, I really like your work, this is the era I'm in, I've actually written something, would you like to read it?
So, I think that both of those things. So I think if you've got a script that you've written, a fully written script, there are places that have to read your script. Like the Royal Court is paid, it gets extra money from the Arts Council to read all the scripts that it gets sent.
No way.
Yeah. So it might take them ages, but they will read it as long as it conforms to the things they say they read. Like they don't read musicals because they don't put on musicals. So you just have to check that it falls within that. But they will read it. It might take ages. And they will send you a letter back about it. Or hopefully, like you're writing, meet you, invite you onto a writer's group or one of those things. So there are theatres that have to do that. The Bush do that, but they do it in little windows. So look and make sure you know when the window is. They don't have the resource anymore just to have that open all the time. So check out all those theatres that do that. And if you live outside London, there are places close that also have to do that. There are sort of script organisations and things that have to do that. So think about the places that have to read your scripts, because that's what their mission is. And then other than that, go, my play is about this, and I know that this is something that these people are interested in. Or, you know, or it's set here. Therefore, I think that would be, if it's set in Sheffield, so I will send it to the Sheffield Press Board. So think about place is really useful as well. You can be quite manipulative about place, because theatres like to speak to their whoever their community is. You know, so if your play is, I don't know, set in Sheffield or set in the north of England or set in Soames or whatever, they really think about going to those places too, because people are always trying to find work. So really think about all the different sort of Venn diagrams of what you're playing.
Yeah, be prepared, like you said, bit of research.
Yeah.
Realise that where you're,
yeah,
like, you know, they target the target audience.
Yeah.
Like, know your customer base, so to speak.
Definitely. The thing I will say as well is that in terms of being a writer, theatres and television, even though they don't quite know where to look always, are always, always hungry looking for new writers. One of the problems in theatre is the fact it just, like, always wants to find the new and can often spit out the thing that has actually been really successful because it wants to always be new. So there is a genuine hunger to try and find work. It can feel like there's a... And if it's not happening, think about maybe why it's not happening. Is the story good enough? Am I telling the play well enough? If people are reading it. But they are hungry to find it.
And that kind of makes me think of this. I think I know the answer, but I wanted to ask. Do you think it's probably helpful to bend to trends? So something that's popular at the moment, would you write towards that in the hope that you might get picked? Or, as you mentioned before, about your value staying true to the story of writing about what you know and what you want to do.
I think your own truth is, I don't mean your literal experience, but I mean your, the thing that you're true to writing is the right thing to do, because trends, like one of the things when I've worked in television, one of the things, my sister works in television as well, one of the things that happens in television is that, so you know that, this was one of the programmes that she made, Waiting for the Out, the Dennis Kelly thing about the prison. Did anyone see that? It's really, really brilliant. It's based on a book. Anyway, they did this series based in a prison about somebody who goes in and teaches in a prison.
Oh, philosophy.
Yeah, he teaches philosophy in prison. He's brilliant. It's really good.
Yeah, it is brilliant. It's clever.
It's really, really clever. A couple of actors in it are people that Dennis met doing workshops in prison, so they've come through the criminal justice system and they're in the thing. One of them is now writing for... So there's a whole sort of cycle in there that's happening. Why was I starting to say that? What was it about what you know...
Yeah, about trends.
Oh, yes. So what's happening now in television... So when they did Waiting for the Out, it wasn't like a big sort of like jazzy thing with big famous people and everything. The BBC made it. It's really what the BBC should be doing. Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Didn't cost loads of money, but it's really what they're doing. But everyone was like, nobody's... We're writing it because we really believe in it. We really believe in the process of it, but we don't think it's going to be a big hit. It was really... Not massive audience, but really successful in terms of who it hit, They showed it at the Ministry of Justice. They went in and showed that it's going to be used in terms of educational things.
Wow.
Now, in television companies, people are saying we need something like Waiting for the Out. Oh, so people are being then told to write something which feels like it's the zeitgeist, but it didn't exist before. The point is that was Waiting for the Out. It's happened.
Yeah.
It's done. Now somebody needs to write something else.
The new
fresh. So my point is that when people aren't very creative, they think you should be doing the thing that's already happened, but really...
Yeah.
The best things are when you're truthful to you and why you need to write them. What's your authentic voice? And it doesn't have to be your experience. It's what is your voice? How do you communicate?
Yeah.
You're not related to Jane Thursday, are you?
I'm so related.
Are you?
She's my little sister.
Oh, she did. Okay, yeah, sorry.
You just Googled.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. She's television producer.
Oh, okay.
Stories from.
Oh,
nice. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it's in the blood then, you know.
It's in the blood, yeah. Yeah.
Steve, I think you raised your hand a bit earlier.
So one is, like, as you said, sending your writing away. So you write something and then you send it. Should you also have like a copyright just in case someone takes your idea? So is there a way to, like...
I mean, it's very good. People have got much, much stricter about that than they used to. So people used to go in, like, for interviews for things. This happens to people... Like for like research jobs at things, and they'd go, so what are your ideas? And then they wouldn't give them the job, and then they'd do the idea.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah. And that does happen. It happens less because we are more aware of the word IP, sort of like it more in common knowledge now. I think you just need to write copyright on it.
Okay.
But it has to be in good faith.
Okay.
If somebody wants to steal your idea, they could and they will.
AI will.
AI will. So yeah, it has to be in good faith.
Is that I was going to say, has that become a thing now? So as you just mentioned about the, you know, production television companies will say, oh, that was a huge success, we need to write something like that.
Yeah.
Are they using AI to write scripts or come up with ideas with writers, or is that off the table?
No, I don't think so. I was just talking to my sister, one of the things they use AI is, like, you know, they have these things called in television called pitch decks. Well, they have where you have an idea and you have to show it to a commissioner. So you'd go, like, we've come up with this idea for things, here's some photos, here's some things. So they use AI to sort of come up with some of that.
So an idea they...
Like just to sort of put it in a practical thing. But they're not using it creatively at the moment.
Good.
The people I know aren't.
Right.
I'm sure it is happening somewhere.
Well, it's interesting because I know Steve is interested in anime.
Yeah.
And I saw there was a really famous Japanese director or writer of anime, and his team came to him and said, oh, we had all these ideas, and they were talking about AI. And he really went off. He said, you know what, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
This is absolutely disgraceful.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Bobby, sorry.
Earlier you talked about, I can't remember the words you used, but when I was at Buck, you would have called it letting perfects get in the way of good. And I wonder what advice you've given to writers over the years who let perfect get in the way of finishing anything.
Oh yeah, that's a brilliant question. I think that, oh my God, so many things.
I feel sick, actually, asking the question.
Why?
Because I feel like it's taken over my whole life, actually.
I bet.
Yeah,
I hear you.
Professional life.
Yeah.
Back when I had a career in an office job, and now as a writer, I think I'm going through the same thing.
But right.
I can't just... I gave you the advice the other day that finishing a draft of something is the hardest thing to do.
Mm. I agree.
Yeah.
That's why when I say I really care.
Must have come across that a lot.
So much. I think it's really easy for me to give the advice, but I don't experience it because I've never written anything. So it's like, there's one of the things you could literally say, well, it's fine for you to say that. But what I would say is that I think that...
Claim that you've had a dislike to the content.
Ooh. Yes, I have. That's a really good question. Because sometimes as an artistic director, there are plays that are useful to put on in the theatre that you sort of go, actually, it's probably easier for me to do that one than someone else or to deal with that. So yes, they have. Or there've also been plays that I've programmed that I felt, I'm not really sure about that. What is interesting about that, about your own truth, is that actually they've always come a bit on to bite me on the bum. I shouldn't have done them. Sometimes you sort of think, oh, I'm putting it on for this reason and it's good and it's going to be for the right thing. But sometimes when your heart isn't fully in something... I've never done anything where I fully disagree with the content, sort of like politically or something, but I've done things which have been sort of on the edge of my taste and whether I thought it was going to communicate well, and often they don't. So, but it's a really brilliant question. It's a real challenge. Yeah.
It's not really a question as much as tying in a few things that have come up earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, one was this thing of theatre and TV.
Yeah.
And something you said about 5 minutes ago about you never know where things will go.
Yeah.
I mean, I roam around quite often filming things.
Wow.
Starting from things like open mic nights where I sometimes perform my own stuff.
Wow.
So I'm in a position to talk to the other people going up who are happy to be filmed.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to push that forward because it interests me. Now, that's not strictly theatre or TV. It's a sort of watered-down version of TV.
Yeah.
And if I weren't there, quite often, that would be the only version that survives of something.
Yeah.
I've wondered about things like where you do a read-through.
Yeah.
Just stick the camera on a tripod,
even
if you're one of the people reading bits of paper.
Yeah.
Because that lets people... you would have to, even if it is just a read through.
Yeah.
Again, it's lowest of low key, it doesn't really count as TV.
No.
But, because when you're reading through, you're not there, you're staring at a bit of paper. Mm. Just
definitely.
To see it afterwards is more.
No, that's really interesting, that's great.
So, anyway, like I say, it's
I
not
think
a
that's
question.
Lovely.
It's
very interesting thing that you do.
A few different points.
Yeah, no, it's another sort of approach to like learning about the work. I think it's really interesting.
It is, and it interests me the fact that, you know, I've produced what is very low grade TV on a camcorder simply because nobody other was doing it.
No. Mm. I mean, picking up from that, one of the things that television currently is terrified about is YouTube. Is the success of YouTube and how many people are now watching things on YouTube. So it is definitely something not to be overlooked if you want to be making sort of filmic content or anything like that. You know, there's so much of it, obviously. But people can stick their head above the parapet through YouTube. So, but television companies are really nervous about it.
A lot of TV companies are actually putting their programs on YouTube.
They really are, totally.
So people copied it and put it on.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I got
another one.
So, obviously, creative people, actors, writers, they love what they do. But if you're someone that is on a benefit, such as pension benefit or something where you rely on that income, how do you get around being paid as an actor, a writer, director, without it causing problems in regards to like tax and things like that?
Yeah. So, say again.
Tax.
I'm sorry, I brought it up in the phone.
Oh. The tax a lot lower. The threshold a lot lower when you were started work. But like it was a lot lower.
Yeah, you were allowed to do certain things.
Yeah,
it was slightly different. But I think that I know loads of theatre companies that are really sensitive to that. So, for example, when we were, I mean, like, so definitely like this place would be, or like places like Clean Break are really sensitive to that. Companies where they work with people, the company's mission is to work with people that definitely are on some form of like credit and that kind of thing as well. So, so there are always, to a certain point, there are ways around it. After a certain point, there isn't. And that's probably right. You know, if you sort of like, if you wrote a play at the Royal Court, they would be able to stagger your commission so that it stayed within the threshold. But if then you were picked up by an agent and then got a big television series commission, then you couldn't do that. So I think companies can be really sensitive to that. And what I would urge is that you would feel confident about asking for that. If that happened, because that might feel like one of those things that you shouldn't be asking for, but that definitely is one of those things you should be asking for, because people really care about being able to enable that to happen. So you work, people work really hard to do that.
Now, yeah. For example, some of us did a play, To Whom It May Concern, and I think I spent more time sorting out with Universal Credit to make sure I was getting paid over 9 months,
even though
the actual project was only 3 months. So I stayed below the threshold.
Yeah, that's right.
It was a huge learning curve for the company.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Well. But it is possible, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is possible.
It's just a bit of auditing, really.
Yeah, it really is. And those companies...
Creative accounting.
And then the companies, if you're doing it with a company, they will help you understand what that is.
Also, going off that, there's a thing that people do. So it's called like a tax dodge. What actors do is they'll go into like a film. For example, there's a film called Movie 43. It came out like a couple of years ago, it's all comedy.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
It had
sketches.
Jackman and everyone. So what they done, they all went in there to avoid tax. It's like a payoff, so they didn't take any money. They just passed that money they earned to charity, so you can get around tax that way.
Wow.
Possibly.
Okay, I'm doing that tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're going to set up a charity.
Do you have another? Samira, I think it's got
one. Is that okay? Does anyone have... Yeah. So if you are someone that is based outside of London and you've exhausted all avenues in terms of the access to getting support with writing, getting support with acting and things, and you feel like it's not getting you anywhere, what would your next, like what advice would you have for someone that is in that position that feels like they're in a place where they've actually tried to reach such different places and it's just not...
Within their like local area or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the things that is also really useful to know, that people who make work in London feel quite guilty about being in London. Weirdly, even though London is a very complicated city to live in. And like trusts and foundations don't like giving money to organisations in London anymore, do they? They've tried really hard to sort of spread, because obviously there's such a lot happening here, and a lot of which is really important and really interesting, so they try really hard to spread it outside.
They never have a Camden address.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's an absolute example. It's an absolute example.
New one.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. But what that means is that actually a lot of companies really try hard to open their doors to people, companies that have some form of national remit. Like, The Kiln wouldn't do that because it's a local theatre in Kilburn. But, like the Royal Court would do that, the National Theatre would do that. Lots of theatres would do that because they have a responsibility to be communicating with outside London. They happen to be based in London, but they have to have a national remit. So look at what those are. Yes, it's really hard. And also look adjacent to where you're from. You know, like, I remember that when I went to University of Manchester and stayed there for a long time afterwards, then I developed a whole North West Playwrights thing. And, of course, because I was, like, so Manchester-based, it really shocked me that Liverpool was part of North West. because I'd got stuck in a Manchester thing. So the Manchester North West Playwrights thing was also totally accessible to playwrights from Liverpool. Mm. So do sort of think a little bit broadly, because the funding comes from the same pot. Interesting thing about North West, the funding is the North West Arts Council, so they have to cover the whole thing, or wherever it is, wherever you're from or wherever you are. Yeah, think about what's adjacent. Yeah.
My daughter's an actor, and she lives up in the world, and she was always laughing at Liverpool, and she's married to this girl, and the boys are all over. She was saying, actually, a lot of southerners don't realise that Liverpool is actually further south of Manchester.
Yeah.
Isn't it all right. Up there somewhere?
Yeah. And also, things like the South East is quite interesting. Like, they're sort of developing quite interesting sort of writing groups and things in Brighton and things like that around as well. So there's lots of other sort of, you know, you can send your work in and that sort of thing. There are lots of other places.
Do you want to go first?
Okay, the last one. What is the most challenging play you've directed? Why? And what was your solution?
So, do you think that means challenging as in what was hard to direct about it, or play that sort of challenged?
I think the question is more about a play that challenged.
Staging,
you.
Or that challenged me.
Yeah.
I think there's lots, but one that came to mind just because I've just mentioned her was a play called Crave by Sarah Kane. And the reason that that was very challenging is that Sarah had written a play, which some people, if you're like theatre geeks and might know about, had written a play called Blasted in her mid-20s. And it was a play that got put on at the Royal Court. It was her first sort of professional play. And the critics just were so disgusting to her about this play, which was an amazing piece of writing. And it had quite a lot of violence in it, and it was quite challenging. And people were like, why has a woman written this play? The things that were written about her was terrible. She was really, really broken about it. And then I worked with her, and then she wrote this other play, which we wrote for a lunchtime reading called Crave, which I did with her. And the thing that was really the reason this play was challenging is because I felt it was my responsibility to put this play on in a way which didn't let that happen to her again. And she'd written Crave is quite poetic and it isn't narrative driven, very, very, very sort of like psychologically dark and complex. And I felt, and it was one of those plays that somebody could easily read and go, this isn't a play, why are you putting this on? So I felt a real challenge, the responsibility to put this on in a way which would sort of make people be able to understand who she was. So that was my biggest challenge.
Ooh.
I've had loads of other things, but that was a real one that I really remember. Yeah. Another one?
Amazing.
Very good question.
Yeah.
How do you keep evolving your own taste and stay inspired when theatre becomes your full-time world?
Oh, wow. That's such a good question. I've got quite a short attention span, so I just sort of consume loads of things. I talk to loads of people and I listen to things. I'm lucky to have lots of young-ish people in my life that I've worked with, or my kids and things like that, so I really sort of absorb that. I think listening is the big thing. Listening to what people say and going, I'm not what I think isn't the only thing, and just making sure that you're always ready to go off on a different.
Yeah, so being open to.
Yeah, being open.
Everything really.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting bored quite easily.
Do you have any more, Samir?
Go for it.
Oh, right. Sorry. Is your phone all right?
Thanks.
Is it right? Oh no.
How do you build a clear artistic vision for a show without shutting down other people's ideas along the way? So I guess working, collaborating with others?
Yeah. I think it's about, if you read a play, having a feeling about what that play does to you. So that's your truth about how you respond to that play. So the feeling is the thing that you're trying to, that's why you're attracted to it. So that's the thing you're trying to work out how to articulate, is that feeling that the play has given you. So that's the first thing. And don't let, it's about instinct, don't let that instinct be dissolved by somebody or overly questioned. Instinct's important, isn't it? It's hard to trust our instincts. Yeah. Lots of things happen to us that stop us from being able to trust our instinct. I think having instinct and being allowed to develop instinct is a real privilege. It's a really important thing to look after and care for. So holding on to that instinct, whatever that is, and then when you bring the people together, communicating what that is, that feeling is, so that everyone is using the same language, is a really important thing. It's like, what is the language or what's the feeling of this? But then expecting that people should surprise you all the time. So the surprising thing. Mm. So it's a thing about having a shared endeavour, but preparing always to be surprised. Mm. And that what you know will only ever have a limit to it, and that other brains and other ideas will make it be a bigger thing. So yeah, sort of surprise. Be surprised.
Amazing. Nah. That's incredible. Do you have any more, Bonnie? Or Samira?
Samira?
Could I ask one more?
Yeah. I've got so many questions.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
This is more like practical, yeah. Thing, but if you're someone that's just written something and it's in a draft format and you have no idea what to do next with it,
yeah.
What would you give them in terms of steps that they can actually do to get their writing from being something that's draft?
Yeah.
Now getting someone to kind of like support, like, yeah, next steps of support of what, like, what does that look like?
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's a great question.
That's such a good question. So the first thing I would do would be to have written the draft, is to put it down, put it away for a little bit, and do something completely different and not think about it. And then say, like, in a week I'm going to come back to it, or whenever. So then come back to it and reread it and try and read it as, I always get subjective and objectively muddled up, as subjectively as possible. So not, so through different eyes. So you're going, well, what is this doing? So you look at it yourself and go, is this doing what I think it was going to do? So that would be the first thing I would do. And when you've answered that, then you would go with all the things that we've been talking about. Who do I think this is going to connect with? Or where do I think this is going to connect with? And find out where, therefore, you would send it. If you have peers and you're part of some kind of community, ask people to read your play for you. Like, I would say the experience that I had working with this amazing group that we worked with here, you were amazing at reading that play, which is a really difficult play, weren't you? You all know the people that were here, the discussions that you had about that really difficult play, you know how good you were at reading it. Yeah. So if, you know, if Barry was going to write a play, I would say to Barry, you know that you could ask some of these people to read that for you, because you know how you all talked about the work, and you know that all of you can do that. So that's really important to get that.
And again, like you said right at the very beginning, that community thing.
Yeah, totally.
So you've got, you know, when they say it takes a village to raise a child, it's a bit like that with what you're saying there. It's like you've got a wealth of, you know, talent and experience, and it's a bit like, I'm stuck here, or I've got to this bit.
Yeah.
You know, can you have a little look?
Yeah, will you read this for me and tell me what you think and what it made you think?
Mm.
And, you know, what, with the people, with what you think, or with theatre that you've been to see, or with who do you think I should send it to?
Because
sometimes, even though people just have a different view, so really use each other in that, I would say, and then get a little. So I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Because,
you know, we're all on each other's doorsteps, aren't we, right there in the cardboard.
Do you know what, that is one of the things about, like, that you sort of lose, isn't it, when you, like, if you have, like, if you go to school, if you go to college, you sort of have, like, ready-made peer groups. You know what I mean? Like, when people, like, do drama together at school, or they go to a youth theatre or something, and as you get older, those things disappear. But find who those people are and do that. That's so underestimated.
Yeah.
create those communities.
Yeah, because you've got to create the group.
Yeah.
That's how, you know, because I'm a football fan, but I've got friends that like football, and we talk about football.
Yeah.
But I don't think if I had a script that I would say to them, guys, what do you think? Because I don't necessarily think that's in their interest.
Yeah. No.
I mean, it could be worthy because they could look at it and go, well, it's this rubbish, and or they might go, bloody hell, this is actually really good. So I wouldn't rule that out, but what I mean is, like, you're all the first people that I would approach.
Yeah.
But it's a building that, isn't it?
Definitely.
It's building.
It's definitely building that. Yeah. I think that's really important.
A friend of mine said something that, I love the phrase you used, try and surprise yourself.
Yes, that's gorgeous.
So I'm going to nick that.
Yeah.
And then, just recently, what was it, last year or so, I did leave something alone, and I looked at it again.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was surprised at what I liked and what I didn't
like. Yeah, there you go. See, that's really good.
So I always think that's a good thing to keep to yourself.
Yeah.
Not keep to yourself.
Yeah, do for yourself. Yeah, I think that's really good.
Steve, you had your hand up. Yeah, cheers.
There's a point for actors now. So when it comes to acting, how do you go for, like, auditions for, like, Netflix and Prime? How do you go about it? Is that more agent, or can you look on, like, Line or
So what's interesting is that I'm going to have to find out about this, because I always work with casting directors now, but they put call-outs on things. So virtually every part, unless it's Hugh Jackman, will have, like, we're looking for, because they have to do that. They have to do, like, a sort of accessible thing. So I think they do it on things like Spotlight and things like that. So have a look. I can't give you the detail of that, but I will find out, and Bonnie and I will find that information.
Yeah, awesome.
So they do, people sort of say, we're looking for so-and-so and so-and-so in this age, and they're going to be auditioned. So that's one thing. The other thing is an agent, because agents will always know that. I think that they're the sort of main things. Yeah.
As a follow-up to that then, what would be the approach to finding an agent? Would that just be the same thing of, like, cold calling, so...
I mean,
the letters, the phone calls.
That's the hardest thing, is to get an acting agent.
Right.
Because, harder than getting a writer's agent, because they have to see you in something.
Right.
So that is a real, like, difficult thing to get an acting agent. But then there are places like, there are organisations like, did I tell you about Open Door? There's a company called Open Door. There's National Youth Theatre Rep. Where I don't know how old you are, Steve, you don't even tell me how old, but it's like under 26. But there are various different places where they offer, like, sort of some sort of, like, drama school training for free for people who couldn't access it. And it's proper, it's amazing. Open Door is amazing.
Wow.
And then they do showcases that people can come to see. So there are those kind of things.
But that's under 26 and
older. I think, no, Open Door is any age. National Youth Theatre is under 26.
Okay. Open Door.
Yeah. Yes.
How do you get a writer's agent then?
You have to send them your writing. Basically, they will read everything. So to get a writer's agent, this is what I would do. I would go online, look at writer's agents. I would look at who they have and under their agent. This is all really accessible to get. It's just a bit boring to have to do it. Look at who you like. Like, if you really like James Graham's work or whatever, or whoever people... just see who they have. See who you feel that... you might taste-wise relate to with them, because different agents have different tastes and things like that. And then send them your play and say, I'm sending you this because I really like the work of X that you've got and so-and-so. Please will you read my play? I'm looking for an agent. And then, so there's that. Or if you can get on writers' groups and you can get, like, readings of things, agents and television people. Theatre people aren't as good as... will always be looking at what's happening in theatre to find new writers. So if you can get, like, a reading done or things like that, like scratch nights and things like that, they're always keeping an eye out for that.
The BBC still run the writer's room.
They do still run the writer's room. How does that work, John? I don't really know. I forgot. I sort of haven't been part of that world for a very long time. You send things in, don't you?
Yeah, once a year.
Yeah, that's
like
it.
A window thing. You have to, like,
yeah. And people do come through it.
And they do read it.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the
they
thing
do.
You get the feedback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get feedback unless you get onto it. Like I did Channel
4
last year, and I got through to the top
10%.
But they don't give you any feedback at all. Like you've got the spot.
No.
They don't say anything about where you
need
to do better.
No.
See, that's really
frustrating.
It's
frustrating. Feedback is so important.
Yeah.
I think as well, there's something about, there's a question here about, where is the question? And what patterns do you notice between directors who have sustainable careers and those who eventually burn out? And I was thinking about in terms of kind of like maintaining that when you're not getting feedback and you're not getting like successes, how to keep on like maintaining. And like there is opportunities, you know, to work with the staff team to like receive feedback on your work. So if that's something you're interested in, you can just drop me an email and maybe work with Chris or another one of our associate artists to receive feedback on your work. Mm-hmm. We're just actually creating a process at the moment for like people logging in time to have one-to-ones with Chris. So once that's more as a more formal process, once that is formalised and we have the process of how everyone would look on, how many sessions one person can have, because obviously we need to make sure it's shed out equally, that's something we can offer as well.
Amazing.
And it's really good because I've just done one with Chris.
Oh, amazing. No, I mean, he's amazing, so yeah. If you can have that, those conversations with him, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Hooray!
Yes.
If it wasn't directing, if it wasn't anything in the arts, what would you be doing?
I always thought I would have been a nurse like my mum.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was the only other thing I thought about. Always.
Is that why you did Where the Heart Is?
Oh, Where the Heart Is.
That's about that. That's Black Widow. Did you?
It's so good. I did do Where the Heart Is. Yeah. Now, the reason I did Where the Heart Is, which is a series that I developed, is because my best friend is a director called John Tiffany, and I met him when I was working in Leeds, and he was still at university in Glasgow, but he's from Huddersfield. And because I'd like moved around a lot, and I'd like from Croydon, which is like such a big place to be from, he's from a small village outside Huddersfield, and his mum was a district nurse. And I went to stay with him, and everybody knew them, the family, and I was like, wow, that must be so weird to live somewhere where literally everybody knows you and that you've like done all that sort of thing. So I was working in television, so I said, I think we should come up with a series
that where
the main character is a district nurse.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was quite big, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on for 10 years.
Yeah, amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and his mum, what was so brilliant was that she was retired and his mum became the advisor on it.
Oh,
so she earned enough money to like get a new carpet and pay off her car and things like that. So I was like, yes!
Yeah.
It's great, isn't
give
it, when
back,
those things happen?
Back.
Yeah, it's good.
And that was just an idea that sparked
because I felt, oh my God, wouldn't it be amazing to come from somewhere where everybody knew you rather than, you know, East Croydon where I don't know anyone. Oddly, it's really funny though, because now I live in Kentish Town and I've lived there for 6 years, and literally you do know everyone there, so that is the village. Yeah. Kentish Town is a village, but Croydon isn't.
Oh, really? Yeah. I really stand for that as well.
Oh my God, it really is. Literally, we've just gone, we know people the same, and it's funny.
Absolutely.
Really dozens. Quickly. It's so small.
Yeah, yeah.
Very specific.
It's even smaller than a village.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's true.
It is really weird.
They all live in the same block. Yeah.
And there's even a farm there as well, isn't there, Kentish Town?
That was the first ever city farm, Kentish Town Farm, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter's obsessed with it.
Yeah. It's free, isn't it? Just amazing.
Yeah. Rides.
Yeah.
Do we have any more questions from the group or from you guys or
anyone?
I'm just kind of interested in your opinion, slightly outside your expertise. Do you think it's possible to be a successful, probably not actor, but maybe director/writer in the arts without being like a public figure on the internet?
Yeah, definitely.
Are people really doing it still? What would be like your... I hear all the time, you can't not be on this. Like, people say, I can't be on this room because otherwise I don't have a career, it doesn't exist. For me, came off social media because it was bad for me.
Yeah.
Went back on because I felt like I was forced into it and then had to come off again.
Yeah.
And I have to stay off, but I want to be a successful writer.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
I think in terms of that success thing, it's on the top of, it's just going over the edge. I think it is changing.
Mm.
I think it has been a massive thing. The thing I think that's difficult about it is that a lot of places promote a lot of their schemes and things through social media because it's so easy for them to do that, and they're presuming, like, you know, if the Royal Court is doing a call out for writers, it will probably only be...
Yeah. Even if people share things with you personally, it's often a link to a social
media
thing you then can't open.
Yeah. So I think that... Yeah, so I think, so I don't think you need to have a presence, you don't need to have a personality on it, but I think people are using it to give information to people. So I think that is a challenge.
Yeah.
But the other thing you can do is get on, people do newsletters still, so you can apply to all the places that you would get on to get their newsletter, like...
But as like a creative director, I've often seen applications for things where you upload your script or whatever, and then they're like, give us a link to your spotlight, give us a link to your Instagram. And I always think, how does that change the perception when it comes to
I think for a writer it doesn't.
Okay.
Like, my son is trying to be a stylist in fashion, and they want his, because that's a visual thing, so they want to see what is his visual vocabulary on Instagram. So that's a slightly different thing, but I don't think as a writer they would...
It's not, it doesn't influence their decision so much.
Absolutely not. I really, really, for a writer, don't think it does.
That's quite comforting.
No, 100%.
I've got, again, slightly out of remit, but with the latest figures for the representation of working class, it's now down to below 3%.
Yeah, I know.
It's atrocious. And in conversations I've had in Camden, a lot of people have actually been coming back about saying that's because of identity crises and stuff, that, you know, being working class, and if you actually grew up and stuff like this, you've got less and less and less. We talked about education and stuff like
totally.
That. We'd never get that money now at all and stuff.
No.
Just wouldn't suppose that.
No.
So what can theatre do? Well, just turn it round.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that people are talking about it. Quotas, yes. But people are talking about it much more again. So that is always... Theatre does go in cycles all the time.
Yeah.
So it's definitely on the agenda. And as soon as it's on the agenda, it's on the Arts Council's agenda, which means that in order to get funding, you will have to demonstrate that you're doing this. So those things, although they don't feel immediate, are happening. So that will sort of push forward, definitely. I think television's oddly much better at that, bizarrely, in terms of stories that it tells. I think the cost of theatre, the ticket prices is a problem.
Yeah.
Because it's also about access and who can go and who affords to go, and then what do they want to see. So then you end up in this sort of thing about, you know, it becomes a self-fulfilling rich people's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit what's happening in quite a lot of the theatre that I feel at the moment.
It's strange because you were saying about never censoring yourself and stuff.
Yeah.
But I do, when I'm writing for theatre, thinking of something like that, literally it's a simple set, maybe just one set.
Yeah.
It's a couple of... Something you could do in the back of a pub.
Yeah.
And I do that deliberately.
Yeah.
You know? When obviously with film, I let my brain go. Because it's going to cost $1 million anyway,
But you know, you can write in a play that could just go on in a pub, you know, and then they're and they're standing underneath the waterfall, and the spaceship comes in and takes them up. You could write that in the play. It's It's the people. It's the amount of people that are expensive, not the imaginative idea that needs to be developed. So if you're writing a play that has to have 100 people in it, that won't get on.
Ooh.
But you can write a really... Well, in fact, the play we did, X, has only got, how many, five people in it, but it's set in space.
A lot of it's done on the big screen in the background.
Yeah, so it's all stuff on there now. So people is it, people are expensive, but imagination shouldn't be. People should be able to.
You know, I was just thinking of actually getting working class people in.
Yeah, great.
Teams of one go, oh, I this.
Yeah.
We did something at the Verbatim Theatre.
Yeah.
With Hear Us Now.
Yeah.
And I got privileged to do a 14-year-old Somalian refugee girl.
Yeah.
Which was quite difficult, but. Yeah. It come through, but we found out afterwards because she was invited too because she's been interviewed, and she was on her phone, bored to death. Why am I doing this silly theatre type stuff? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then suddenly I started to say her words.
Yeah.
And suddenly.
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
And we went back. And I said, "I'm going to go."
It's
the most magical thing. That we started doing some workshops. For everybody that in the Aylesbury estate that they could come along to and have a go. And she came along, and then someone, I think Pixie actually, recognised her because he'd interviewed her and stuff. And she just said, I've never realised, I've got a voice.
Wow.
I'm done by a 68-year-old.
That's amazing.
So it was just like realising that's the type of thing you need to be
100%,
doing.
100%, that's right, all those. Yeah, community theatre is what that that develops.
Yeah, like the thing we set up in the neighbourhood in the younger.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
That's weird.
Go on.
I just wanted to ask, so as a director, have you had any material that you've turned down that's not due to scheduling reasons? If that's so, why did that happen?
I mean, often something doesn't connect with you, so you think I don't have an emotional connection with this piece of work, so that would be a reason. Sometimes because it's rubbish.
Mm-hmm. What springtime for people?
Yeah, but you know, something where you just go, actually, it's not really very good. It thinks it's good, or it's not very good. It's rambling. I can do that. Yeah, that or sometimes. A lot of work that is actually quite distasteful, that's disrespectful, has got a sort of thread running through it, which the writer won't realise has got a sort of like, I don't know, something which I feel uncomfortable about politically or identity-wise or whatever. So often, yeah, it's important to be able to say no.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's hard, though, when you need the work, but it's important. Above all, to thine own self be true.
Mm-hmm. In comedy is probably the hardest to actually get that.
How to
be edgy enough.
Yeah, it is.
Without
insulting
them.
Yeah. No, it's true. You had you wanted sorry, I don't know your name. Did you have your hand? Oh, I thought you did. I'm like, is it you? It's you. No. I was pointing at you, sorry.
And this is going to be the last question because I just want us to have time to check out.
Cool, absolutely.
So, Samira, over to you.
So, obviously, as creatives, your why is very important. Sometimes your why can change. What is your why? Why has it kept you going?
This is where I get really emotional.
Mm-hmm. Your turn.
Some of them have seen me get really emotional before. Because I really believe in empathy. And I really believe that we can experience things through story that we don't have a direct experience of, and it can change the way we are, and it can change the way we see the world. And empathy is the most important human emotion because it's about care and understanding and tolerance. And I think that telling stories brings that hugely. And the thing about theatre is, which is the live, I think it happens in so many different things, I've got goosebumps saying this, but the thing about the live is that we are a community together when we're watching something, and we all bear witness together to that experience of empathy, and I think that really changes us in some way, so that's why I feel so passionate about it.
Thank you for all
Thank you so much.